Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
There we have it, Use fans. The FA Cup dream is over for another season. A valiant effort on the night when we gave Luton too much of a head start. That's Cambridge out of all cup competitions now, which means we can focus on securing League One football for next season. On today's Under the Abbey Stand, we'll review all the talking points from the Luton game, look ahead to another double game week, discuss hopes for the rest of the season, and plenty of two up top chat. I'm your host. My name is Jordan Warland. And I'm not too bothered about not playing Chelsea in the next round. It's overrated, huh? I'm over that. I've got a panel with me, as always, to talk about everything Cambridge United. My first panelist is joining us from a hotel room because he's just that kind of bougie guy. Good evening, Owen.
Good evening, Jordan. Yep, I'm at the salubrious surroundings of the Premier Inn in Gatwick Airport. So, apologies for any bad reception.
I'm sure it'll be fine, mate. I'm sure it'll be fine. I feel like the pod might be a little bit negative anyway this week. It's been a while since we've done a pod since a 3-0 defeat. Owen, a very quick question before we get going. Did we lose yesterday because we weren't wearing yellow shorts?
Oh, you don't even need to ask that. Come on, of course. Of course. Come on, Bonner. Come on, Gaz Daniels. Sort it out. Free the leagues.
My second panellist, stalwart of the pod. Good evening, Tom.
Yeah, good to be back. As you say, Jordan, shit tin pot trophy. Focus on the league.
Well, my quick question to start the pod for you, Tom, was, did you feel yesterday there was an improvement in the standard of the homemade FA Cup trophies on display at the stadium, or was it another poor effort in your opinion?
Yeah, we analysed them in great detail in the chat that we've got between ourselves. We decided, I think, that one of them that had made or sort of got decent coverage looked more like the Scottish Cup. Yep. So still not quite there. I won't dig into old territory about one that reared its ugly head in our second round game against Exeter, which was simply not the FA Cup. But I don't know.
Good effort. Why is there a photo of you holding it, though? That's the real question.
I think that goes down to Matt Caspell's efforts on Photoshop. So, yeah.
Just one gripe before we get going. In said UTAS chat, you did say that you would, on Saturday afternoon pre-game, create your own FA Cup. And then I met up with you pre-game, and instead of doing that, you were focusing on drinking pints and making up new songs for Adam May. So I was let down before kickoff even happened, mate.
Yeah, old habits die hard. I can't do much about that. Sorry, Jordan.
Right, should we crack on then? Because there's plenty to discuss. Tom Walker, I am coming to you first. After the game, you tweeted that game was a classic Cambridge versus Luton, where our heads turned to jelly when it came to the important stuff. Can you talk me through that tweet? And of course, can you give me your hot takes from the game?
Yeah, of course. As always, ready and raring to go with these. I think typically in the years gone by where we've played Luton quite regularly, obviously maybe not for the last couple of years, but certainly for the sort of 7 or 8 before that. I always felt like Luton games were the sort of games where in the big moments, they're the ones that get either, you know, the bit of luck or show that bit of quality or that bit of strength just to kind of win the games. I think that's reflected in our record at the Abbey. I think we've won only like one in like our last 7 games against them at the Abbey. And our record at Kenilworth Road is pretty similar. And I felt that the game on Saturday was similar to that. Like, I wasn't really expecting us to kind of come out of the blocks in the way that we did, to be honest. Certainly for the first 15 minutes, like, we were significantly the better team without really testing their goalkeeper too much. So it was all sort of huff and puff with no real bite at the end of it, if you like. And then if you look at the two goals that we conceded, I'm sure we'll discuss them in maybe more detail. But I mean, the first one is just a free header from a set piece. And, you know, I think, you know, this is a game that you're going to be up against it because you're playing against championship opposition. You know, you've got key players out injured, that sort of stuff. And in that situation, your structure and sort of organisation, particularly set pieces, that's kind of a non-negotiable. You can't concede goals like that. And you know, expect to win games against the opposition in sort of higher leagues than you. The second one is, again, soft. I think it came from a Luton throw-in where I think you had Williams, I think it was Okadine, who got dragged out of position. And then, you know, it's just a bit of a mess. It falls to Mendes Gomez, who obviously we know well from Morecambe. And, you know, obviously finishes well, I think. And by that point, you know, I know that the FA Cup, you know, year on year does provide interesting moments and sort of storylines and that sort of stuff. But I think realistically, 2-0 down, half an hour gone against a team from the Championship at home. I think by that time, realistically, the game was all but done, to be honest. That might be a bit harsh, but it just kind of played out.
I'm not sure it is harsh because I think the record shows that we've not won from a losing position this season in the league. I can't think of an instance.
Yeah, I think...
Tweet in if I'm wrong, please do.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, similarly, I don't think we've lost a game that we've gone ahead in. So it shows that, you know, we're very, very dogged and very resilient, but maybe just don't quite have enough quality to turn games around when it's needed. But that's obviously another conversation a little bit, I think. But yeah, then I think the rest of the game sort of just played out exactly as Luton would have liked. They were able to just kind of sit back, let us kind of tippy and tappy around it in the defence, in the midfield, and sort of try and create good openings. But like we spoke about before, it's difficult for us because we don't have our focal point, our top scorer, and obviously the one that we always look to, who, you know, obviously Joe Ironside, and you know, Smith, for all his qualities, I don't think he's that guy. Doesn't quite have the right attributes to play in that sort of lone striker role. And you know, when the chance did come, unfortunately, he didn't make enough of it. And you know, in those games, like I say, when it's one of those where you know you're going to be up against better opposition, especially when you're 2-0 down, when that chance does come, you have to score. And yeah, I think by the time that they'd scored their third goal, I think, you know, the tie was completely done. And I think by the time that Bonner came around to making his substitutions, I think, like maybe some fans, he kind of had one eye on Tuesday.
There'll be plenty of discussion around the lone striker role through this pod. It feels a little bit like we may have been fortunate in the first games that Ironside was away or unavailable. He's not away, is he? He's not on holiday. He's injured. But the last couple of games, it does really feel like perhaps we're now coming up short, sort of trying to shoehorn Sam Smith into a role that isn't his natural one. So we'll come on to that later. Owen, I'm after your takes on the game, and I think it would be good if maybe you answered the question that we received from James Denton, who asked, was the game a missed opportunity or just one to forget?
Yeah, it was definitely one to forget when you look at the result, for sure. Was it a missed opportunity? I don't know. It's hard to say. We didn't play really badly. Luton didn't play especially well. I think it just kind of shows the gulf in class really between the two teams and our respective positions at the moment. And you look at the caliber of the players Luton were able to bring on. You look at the caliber of their starting 11, which they'd even made some changes. You look at where they are in the Championship compared to where we are in League One. There is just this kind of gulf there. But I think also we gifted them goals. I think the game could have been very different if perhaps they hadn't scored when they did. You look at the nature of the goals. The first one was a free kick that Dunk shouldn't be conceding there, really. That's a really dangerous place to concede a free kick. And the second one was just pretty awful from Dunk and from George Williams as well, wasn't it? So, yeah, I don't know. It's a cup game. It's not the end of the world. We've had a great run in the cup. We've made some fantastic memories. And yeah, we're not going to miss Chelsea in the next round, are we?
Absolutely. I guess there's a part of me that thinks it's a missed opportunity because it was a rotated Luton team. There was the conditions and it was at home. But then another part of me thinks, we gave Luton just a chance to go into cruise control and just see out the game from sort of 20 minutes onwards. And I know we had a lot of the ball and a lot of possession in the second half, but I wonder how much of that was because Luton was just happy to let us try and find a way through. Owen, you made a really good point there about the goals conceded. It's two games in a row now, Owen, where we've been instrumental in sort of the goals that we've conceded through sort of our own mistakes. We saw that with the first one away to Bolton midweek. How apparent to you, Owen, is it that we are missing key players at the moment, both in defence and also further up the pitch?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of clear as day, isn't it? We really missed Jack Iredell yesterday. As good as kind of Okadina had a pretty decent game yesterday, and Schering had a pretty decent game. But they've got like 30 or 40 league appearances between them, those two. You're missing your Greg Taylor with all the experience. I think in a game like that yesterday against opposition like Luton, I think you needed someone there to kind of marshal the defence a little bit up front. I mean, you said we're going to speak about this in a bit, and I'm sure we will, but yeah, we miss Joe Ironside. For the way we play, we miss him, because Sam Smith isn't Joe Ironside, Laurent Tolage isn't Joe Ironside, and Harvey Nibbs certainly isn't Joe Ironside.
Tom, yesterday, if my maths is right, was our 10th game in 34 days. Yesterday and even Tuesday night away to Bolton, to me, it looked like we were tired and we were showing signs of fatigue. We've had a question come in from Shane, and he asks, is having a small squad such a good idea? So what's your take on sort of the squad number situation that we've got? And do you think that everyone's just showing signs of basically being tired and needing a rest, but they can't get a rest because there's no let up in midweek games or people to rotate with?
Yeah, it's a really tough schedule, I think, to sort of contend with. I think it's always likely in a run of games like that, it is going to be the away games at your Boltons, who, you know, like to use the pitch, very expansive team, and against, you know, higher ranked opposition like Luton, they're going to be the games that really show that fatigue, I think. And if I can just put my happy clapper cap on for 1 second, I'd say that throughout that run of games, we won the important ones. And that for me is kind of a consolation, I guess, from obviously maybe a disappointing sort of, last couple of games in terms of the results and the sort of manner of goals that we've conceded. But yeah, I mean, I think even if, you know, you had like another two or three players in the squad, like, it's still going to look pretty tired at the end of it, because, you know, if you're playing like a game of football every 3 or 4 days, that's a pretty difficult situation to manage, I think. So I'm not convinced that it's necessarily a problem with the size of the squad. And I think we know by now that Mark Bonner likes to have a smaller squad, and, you know, who am I to question Mark Bonner's decision-making process in terms of building a team and how he thinks is best to approach a season. So I'm not sure it's so much of an issue of the squad, but I think the injuries have really killed us, to be honest. It's a bit disappointing, really, that you know, we had to go into the game missing the key players that we have out. I'll leave Lloyd Jones aside, because he's obviously been quite a long-term absentee, and I guess same for Tracy, but at least to have had Joe Ironside and Jack Iredell there would have made it a really interesting encounter. And I think for the sort of occasion that it was, sold out Abbey, 5:30 kickoff, on TV, all these things, it would have been really nice to have had that. But yeah, I mean, it is a small squad, and it's been tested to its very, very limits at the moment. And to be honest, I think for the most part, we've done okay. But yeah, it's shown in the last couple of games.
Yeah, I think it's an odd one, because a lot's made of the fact that we started with Schering and Okadina at centre backs, and they're missing the organiser from the organisation from Iredell. He's known as the organiser when he's playing with this young centre back. But actually, first half, it was kind of your more experienced fullbacks that let the side down with both goals. You know, Dunk's foul for the free kick, and then Williams' misjudgment of the wind and his header, and then Dunk again slipping. So it was kind of the experience that let him down. And I wonder if that might be a sign of fatigue and too many games being played. But Tom, you said you're you're not one to question Mark Bonner's decisions, but I am going to get you to question Mark Bonner's decisions. And we're going to return to a topic that we have mentioned many times before. So I'm sure you're well rehearsed with an answer for this one, but we've had numerous questions come in on Twitter. So thank you everyone for sending them in, but quite a lot have come in about the substitutes last night. Basically, do we agree with Bonner's tactics with the subs yesterday? And the big one is, if we had made any changes earlier, do you reckon we could have got anything from the game?
I guess we'll never know. It's a theme that's come up on a few occasions. Obviously, most notably, it's come up when we've lost games, which is fair enough. I'm not sure we've had too many tweets in and sort of topics of conversation crediting Mark Bonner's patience and his ability to change things within games when we've won. But I guess that's the nature of being a football fan and the nature of discussion around football games. I'll be honest, like, just to counteract that a little bit, I was a little frustrated myself watching the game. I just felt that it's a cup fixture and I'd rather have lost it like 4-0, just trying to go for it, just trying to get back into the game. Maybe that's why I'm not a professional football manager, but
mate, as long as it wasn't 4-0 with 4 Luke Berry goals,
I guess that's one of the silver liners of the game. To be fair, that your man Bez didn't pop up and didn't even make it onto the pitch. But again, that's probably another conversation. I thought the thing that kind of got me a little bit was that I felt there was kind of a target man shaped hole on the pitch all game, and I think Tolage is probably the closest that we've got to it. And he didn't come on for 75 minutes, which I thought was a little odd. He's obviously, well, I guess probably not, fully match fit for the sort of professional game. And he's probably not quite maybe ready in terms of his the finesse that he's got, shall we say. I think with the subs, I think the players that came off, Nibs, Brophy, May, I think there was maybe a bit of an eye on Tuesday with that, because they're all probably players who are gonna play again. And we've just spoken about how many games we've played in a relatively short period of time, and that might be to keep them fresh, I guess. I can understand the point, because if you're 2-0 down and you're just trying to do the same things, then obviously I guess it's the literal definition of madness. But I think it's a theme of Mark Bonner's management, and there's going to be some days like Luton where maybe it does look like it's a bit slow to react, but I think there's enough credit in the bank to let him have that one off.
Many frustrating things from the Luton game. I think one of them was, like you say, Tom, the lack of a target man for Cambridge United, whereas you look at the other end and you look at your boy Cameron Jerome doing such a great job doing that role for Luton. It was a real slap in the face of what we were missing. Owen, Tom talks there about, how Mark Bonner prefers having the small squad, and in many ways, I think the small squad is the reason why we've got such a good team spirit and perhaps are, continuing to punch above our weight for a second season in a row. We've had a question come in from Jono, who wants our thoughts on the January transfer window. Tom already spoke about this in the last pod, so I'm going to come to you, Owen, on this one. But would you say we've had a good January window? Do you think we've strengthened enough given the injuries that we've got? And are you worried at all by the fact that Bonner does seem to be edging his bets on players coming back from injury? Obviously, we had Taylor on the bench yesterday, which is great. But is there any concern in your eyes, Owen, that we might be dropping points over the next couple of weeks as we wait for these lads to come back?
My question is, what do people expect from a Cambridge United transfer window? We haven't got any money to go out and get anyone, considerably decent. We're going to be looking at the loan system, at the academy system. Anyone that's getting loaned out in January isn't anyone that's any good, or anyone that's settled in a goal scoring routine at their club. And I think we discussed in the last pod, like, anyone in the anyone in the academy system probably isn't going to be like a big decent target man who knows where the goal is. The academy system tends to kind of prefer like quicker, more slight players, I suppose, your Shiloh Tracy's and people like that. I know there's exceptions. I know Ironside came through the Sheffield United Academy and what have you, but it's, I don't know, like, what do you honestly expect Cambridge to do in the transfer window? Like, in the January window, players are expensive, all their crap for a reason. You know, we can't go out and spend half a million quid on the player that's going to get us the goals to get us a playoff push or anything like that. It's just, you know, we bought in Tolage, he looks like a decent player. We bought in Sam Schering, he looks like a decent player. If we bring in tons and tons of Premier League loanees, that's just going to harm the development of, you know, the likes of Ben Warman and Kai Yearn and our own players. And they're the future. They're the future for United. They're the ones that hopefully one day will, you know, maybe move on and bring us in a really significant transfer fee that in a few years, might allow us to, you know, have the kind of January where we can go out and spend a bit of money on someone. So we had as good a January as you can realistically expect.
I wonder, though, if there's maybe some areas that aren't well covered by our sort of younger players. I'm thinking like Dunk had a tough game yesterday. There's not a left back about to break through that I'm aware of. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. So I wonder if perhaps, you know, maybe we could have expected a few more heads just for the sake of, you know, of keeping everyone fresh as we go through these couple of weeks with lots of games. But I guess it's done and dusted, and unless we sign anyone on a free who's unattached from a club, that is our numbers for the rest of the season. And yeah, good to see Taylor coming back, getting minutes. Didn't get minutes, but on the bench at least. Hopefully that's the start of a trend over the next couple of weeks. Right, we've been skirting around the topic of our centre forwards and our shape and our options there. So let's get into it in more detail. We've had lots of questions and queries come in on Twitter around the whole sort of striker options, and they've kind of fallen into two categories. Owen, I'm going to come to you with the first category, which is around the fact that it is becoming really obvious that Sam Smith can't play the straight replacement for Joe Ironside, which in my eyes is completely justified, and it's not me digging him out. He's not that kind of player. He's not that kind of build. So we have, of course, signed Tolage from Brighton on loan to the end of the season. So my question to you, Owen, is do you think he should now be pushing for starting, given that, you know, Smith has had a difficult last couple of outings trying to fulfil that Ironside role?
Yeah, absolutely. Even if Bonnell doesn't think he's ready to start, give him a little bit more than 15 minutes at the end of two games. Like, come on, we've said this about Bonner, there's a lot we love about him, but there's a couple of things that I think frustrate us a little bit about Mark Bonner, and I don't think I'm being unfair in saying his fondness for late substitutions is one of those. It kind of came to the fore last year. It's come to the fore again this year. Is, you know, maybe he knows more about us than Tolage. Maybe he's not match fit. Sorry, maybe he's not got 30, 40 minutes in him. But I'd like to see a bit more of him. He must be pushing for a start. He's not come here to play second fiddle to Smith and Nibs. He wants to get scoring. He wants to, you know, I think he's a Swiss under 21 international, isn't he? So he wants to kind of keep his place in their squad, and by doing that, by playing games at professional level and scoring. So yeah, I'd like to see some more of him, and hopefully we do get to see him. On the flip side of everything I've just said, it does also show, as much as I've kind of dug Mark Bonner out a little bit there for making late substitutions, it does kind of show his loyalty a little bit to the players we do have. And, you know, he's doing right by Nibs and Smith, but you know, there comes a time when you just think neither of you are playing that well at the moment, and let's try someone else in that role.
It's interesting you mentioned Bonner's loyalty there, because I actually also think that he's been loyal to Tolage as part of the squad, and I'm wondering if this is another example, which we've seen many over the last couple of years, where Bonner is very good at protecting players. So I'm wondering if he's not thrown him straight into the starting lineup, like you say, because he's maybe not match fit. He's only played a handful of sort of Pizza Trophy games, and then the rest has all been that sort of B team level. Perhaps, you know, Bonner is trying to protect his confidence and you know, his identity by not sort of throwing him straight into the starting lineup. So I wonder if that's maybe why we haven't seen him start yet. Perhaps we see him start on Tuesday night. Who knows? Tom, the flip side to starting Tolage and sticking with one up top, and this is the second area that we had lots of questions about, is, well, do you scrap that formation, and do you go with a second man up top? And yeah, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think Tolage or Smith or Nibs should continue as a lone striker, or would you like to see us tweak the formation and play two up top?
I wouldn't like to see us continue necessarily with Smith as a lone striker. That's not I hope that doesn't come across as doing down Smith too much. I think he's had, in the main, a pretty decent season. But I think we struggle to consistently play football in a way that benefits Smith up front. I think he's a sort of player who wants to be sort of running onto things, I think. And the problem is, if he's running onto things, then he's not in the box. If he's not in the box, then there's nobody to kind of get on the end of crosses that might come in as a result of that work. And that's obviously where Joe Ironside would normally be. I think a change in shape is something to consider. You know, if you go to 4-4-2, obviously it allows you to bring the other striker in. I guess that would be Tolage, you know, someone to play in a way that Ironside might, or closer to that, and certainly give Smith a bit of help up there. But then, I guess, especially on Saturdays, it comes with the age-old question of what do you do with Wesley Houlihan?
That was my sort of follow-up question. Like, if you bring in a second striker, and bear in mind, I love a good formation talk, so I've got to keep an eye on the clock and make sure we don't go on all night. But yeah, if you do bring in a second striker, like, how do you do it? Like, who do you sacrifice? Do you sacrifice a number 10, so no Wares or maybe Lancaster on a Tuesday, and go with a sort of a 4-3-1-2, which Liam suggested on Twitter, or return to the diamond like last year? Or do you go with a more conventional flat 4-4-2, which might protect the defense a bit more and basically means you're not dropping Brophy? So what's your gut saying, like, if you were there in the dressing room and had to pick a formation, which one would you go with and why?
Tonight, Jordan and Cambridge United will be playing 4-4-2. I jest.
Get your football manager game out and show us what you've got lined up for Tuesday.
I'm crap at that as well, so I wouldn't put too much faith in myself there. I think something resembling a 4-3-1-2 is something that interests me a little bit, purely because it allows you to get a strike on the pitch, an extra strike on the pitch, while also keeping Wes sort of quite close to them. I think that's basically the sort of solution that you'd be looking for, is what ways can you do that? And that's obviously one that presents itself. I know, Joy, that you are quite a radicalist compared to myself, and you'd probably be looking to shift around with the defence and go three at the back and one in midfield and three out wide and stuff like that. But I think that's basically the criteria for the sort of formation change that I'd like, is what ways can we get another strike on the pitch and keep Wes playing where he's best. And that's obviously, you know, something maybe the bottom might consider, probably not immediately, because obviously we travelled to Gillingham on Tuesday, and I guess we'll be without Wes for that one. But you know, maybe the sort of Saturday games that we've got coming up, we might see something, particularly at the Abbey, that's maybe a bit different. I also think it might be quite harsh on James Brophy if there was to be a formation change and he was kind of dropped as a result of that. I get that he's maybe not flavour of the month for a lot of people, but I think he's been pretty good overall through this sort of busy period of games. And even, to be honest, that sort of tough run of games that we had at the end of 2021, where we played against sort of top teams in the division, I thought he offered a really useful outlet, and his ability to beat a man and sort of get us up the pitch is really useful, you know, in the sort of way that we, you know, normally play. I appreciate the end products there, but look, let's not go down the same rabbit hole of conversation that we have done a number of times about if he did have that end product, then he probably wouldn't be playing for us, etc. and etc. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. I think something, you know, maybe a a shift in the formation or a shift in the shape is maybe what's needed. Maybe not a permanent thing. Maybe just while we're waiting on the fitness of maybe one or two key players that are hopefully coming back fairly soon. But I guess if we've talked, you know, at length already on this pod about the issues that we've had up front, then maybe it's quite an obvious thing to do.
I guess the other problem as well is when you've got the midweek games, which essentially means you lose Tuesday and Wednesday's sessions, you don't really have the time to be practicing out on the training pitch a new formation. And I think it's, you know, maybe us in the stands think it's quite an easy, straightforward thing and be like, oh, I'll just put a second striker on and play this way. But actually we are maybe doing the team a misjustice in how much sort of goes on behind the scenes in terms of sort of, you know, putting together formation. So I wonder if the numerous cup competitions and the COVID cancellations and the fact that we've had so many Tuesday games has hindered us, not only with the team being tired, like we mentioned before, but also hindered us in the chance of coming up with sort of new tactics, new formations and getting training time in for the new lads. Just one last point before we move on to look ahead to the Gillingham game. Joe's been in touch to ask about our sort of attacking midfielders. A lot of what we've spoken about on the pod so far has been acknowledging that we've got issues up top because we don't have Ironside. Pretty straightforward, isn't it? And actually the answer is playing a second striker or changing the way we play. But Joe puts a different angle on it, which is quite an interesting one, and says, should we be expecting three attacking midfielders to be creating more chances or doing more to support the lone striker than we've been seeing? What do you guys think of that take?
I think, I think particularly for set pieces, maybe your man Wesley could be doing a little bit more. I know there's a little bit of frustration about some of the deliveries, which weren't weren't what you might expect of a recent or sort of ex international footballer. But I think that's one thing that, you know, obviously will be looked at is chance creation. In the Luton game, you know, while we can talk about maybe strikers not delivering the goods in the formation that they're playing, I think we only really had that one clear-cut opportunity to actually score a goal. There are a couple of others, you know, particularly in that sort of first 15 minutes where it like fell to players on the edge of the box or sort of crosses went in and stuff like that. But clearly there is a problem with creativity there or has been in the last couple of weeks. Maybe it's just about them taking a bit more responsibility for it. I'm not sure if there's anything that you can necessarily change to improve that. Maybe it's just a case of the players behind the scenes to contribute a bit more, really. I don't really have too much more of a fix than that.
Seems like a good place to pause it and look ahead to Tuesday night where we play a resurgent Gillingham. Before we look at that game, I caught up with Matt from the Gills in the Blood podcast to get some insight on all things Gillingham. Right then, news fans, I am joined by Matt from Gills in the Blood podcast, which is dedicated to everything about Gillingham, to get some insight ahead of our visit on Tuesday night. Matt, thank you very much for chatting to us again. Last time we spoke was on the eve of your 2-0 win down here in September. Things haven't quite gone to plan since that night for you guys though, right? It's not been it wasn't the instigator for you sort of pulling clear from the bottom four and we find yourselves 23rd at the time of speaking.
Yeah, that was meant to be the day that we kicked on, and I thought we were really good that night. We were good value for the win. We were good value for the clean sheet. We scored two very good goals. I think Danny Lloyd scored an absolute belter that night. At the time, it was a proper Steve Evans Gillingham performance. Obviously, it's going to be completely different Tuesday night, and that was our second win of the season. If you've only won two more in the league since then you're going to be in a bit of trouble, and that's why we are 23rd. We've had a week now, well, 6 days of Neil Harris in charge. We beat Crewe last Tuesday, a very poor Crewe side. You can see why they're down there with us. And then we went to Ipswich on Saturday and deserved all 3 points. I'm not going to sit here and pretend because I'm fed up with being negative about Gillingham Football Club. So I'm not going to sit here and say I would have been disappointed if we'd only drawn the game. So to have got beat 1-0 was hugely frustrating. But there were massive signs. It's a completely different team that shipped 7 at home to Oxford just last Saturday. We looked resolute. We look like we know what we're doing in terms of a system. And I think Neil Harris will only make us stronger throughout the rest of the campaign. Whether we've got enough games left and points to play for, I'm not so sure. But it at least makes us more optimistic, even if we're in League Two next season, that it might be a better season. Because I think the fear before that was the fact that we could just plummet all the way through to the National League if we didn't make the right appointment. And I was staggered when we announced last Monday that we'd managed to persuade Harris to come in, especially on a 2.5-year contract as well. And it seems that he's here for the long haul. There was a few social media rumours saying that he had a release clause if we did get relegated, but he's categorically denied that. So it does look like he's here for the mid to long term, which is hugely exciting.
Sounds like you're quite positive with his appointment then. There's been a couple of departures from Gillingham in January. What's your sort of take on the players that you've lost that window?
I think the first one we lost was Jamie Carmen. Unfortunately, he'd been, you know, one of the best keepers in the division. Unfortunately, hugely overworked from our point of view. He'd rather he wasn't in team of the week most weeks and team of the season, because it means he's not having to do too much. But I think he had a lot higher save percentage, points saved. That tells you again where we are. And then we replaced him with Pontus Dahlberg, who came in on loan from Watford. At the time, we said only we could manage to lose goalkeeper who jumps from 23rd to 5th in the league in the space of 3 hours, and replacing with a player that's featured for the only team that was below us before, and that was Doncaster first half of the season. But Dahlberg looks all right, but he just looks like he's got a mistake in him every game, unfortunately. And he gave one of the penalties away against Oxford last Saturday, dawdled on the ball, little Cruyff turn, dragged back, and then took forever to kick it and got caught and then pushed the fella over. And he paid for that error with his place in the side on Tuesday night, and Aaron Chapman solid and kept his place at the weekend, and rightly so, and didn't have a lot to do, which says all we need to know about how good we were at Portman Road. So I can't see Dahlberg getting back in any time soon. We then got rid of John Akindi, Rhys Bennett. We ripped their contracts up so they could go elsewhere. They went to Colchester and Morecambe respectively. And then the last one was Carl Dempsey, but it had been coming all transfer. We know it was just a case of at what time on deadline day it was being announced. And we got a fee for him. I think there's a few add-ons as well. And fingers crossed that hopefully pays off the EFL loan that the chairman took out at the start of the season. And if we do go down, at least it gives Neil Harris a chance that we're starting from zero and being restricted by the loan agreement.
So the players that have come in this January, do you reckon they're good enough replacements for the lads that you've lost?
Dahlberg's a step down on Jamie Cumming, and that's no disrespect to the kid, but Jamie Cumming was one of the best keepers in the division, and that's why MK Dons wanted him to replace their keeper who went to the championship. We've got two or three that we don't know enough about to say, yes, they're going to be successful or they're an upgrade. Connor Masterson's made a great start to his Jules career. He was on loan with you guys, incidentally, at the start of the season. It seems that we just let centre-halves go to Cambridge and then we scout them for half a season and then pinch them because we nicked Robbie Cundy last season. He turned out to be a revelation as well. But Masterson started really well. He's been very good, was part of the clean sheet in that back three last Tuesday against Crewe, and he was a contender for me for man of the match on Saturday. We got Charlie Kelman back. He originally came in on loan for a season back in the summer. I think then fell out with Steve Evans and Paul Rayner. Shock horror. but then we got him back when Steve Lovell took over on an interim basis. He's been decent. He works hard enough, just needs a goal. Tom Dixon-Peters, another one coming from Norwich, just looks some way off it at the moment. And that's no disrespect. He's a kid. It's his first loan in senior football, but he just looks half a yard off the pace. But with more minutes and more coaching, and I think Neil Harris is more of an arm around the shoulder type gaffer. We know what strikers are like. They get one, they can go on a little run. And I'm trying to think if there was any more. Oh, Ben Thompson was the last one, obviously the replacement for Carl Dempsey, played under Harris at Millwall, hasn't featured this season hardly at all. It looks a very good signing based on the hour that we saw on Saturday. He's got two good feet. He looks a bit like a clone of Dempsey, to be honest. Same sort of build, stature, the way he plays, just got different hair colour. But no, he was very good. It was a very promising hour. I think he came off I think he took a whack to the foot, and also fatigue. He's only played one first team game since September, so he was obviously not going to last the 90 minutes. We just hope he's fit for Tuesday night and hopefully the rest of the running, because all the noise is coming from the Millwall fan base said that we've done very well to be able to persuade Ben Thompson to join us, especially in the position that we're in at the moment. It's not like we're top half of League One and challenging. We really are in a desperate dogfight to stay alive in this league.
Yeah. We love a good Steve Evans chat amongst Cambridge fans. Would you say that it was the right decision to get rid of him? Were you Evans out when it happened?
I think it got to the point, I've said a few times on my videos and to Gillingham fans and opposition fans, that I never thought we'd ever be in a relegation battle under Steve Evans, regardless of, you know, his methods and what he's done before. And I know that he's alienated a lot of other fan bases, and I understand that. I never liked him before he became Gillingham manager, but he made us a better football club. We were challenging for the playoffs for two seasons, and that's, you know, been unheard of for Gillingham at this level for a long, long time. We had a massive injury crisis through the winter, probably from sort of October through to Christmas. There was two games in December where we had four kids on the bench, and that was literally it, because we had 10 out. But like I've said to other people, it doesn't say relegated, but never mind, you had lots of injuries. If you get relegated, it just says relegated. So we have to deal with it in the way that any other club has to deal with an injury crisis. That Ipswich performance, to me, looked like Steve Evans had had enough. We played a utility defensive player up front as a second striker, and we were sort of looking around at each other in the ground and thinking, lost the plot. And then obviously we were 3-0 down inside 20 minutes, and we got the dreaded, as we like to call it, Gillingham fans, the football in front of the Raynham end, and then the attached statement the next day to say that he'd been released from his contract. And I think we did need fresh eyes, a fresh approach. I said Steve Lovell wasn't the long-term option, but fair play to him to come in at short notice and help us out for what turned out to be four games. But then his position, unfortunately, became pretty much untenable when you ship seven at home. It's regardless of where you are, professional footballers shouldn't be conceding seven at home. And if that's what it needed for us to hit rock bottom to persuade someone like Neil Harris to come in, then we'll have to suck it up and hope that moving forward, we'll be in a much better place.
No, it's probably really too early to ask this, because he's only had, two games in charge?
Two games and about two training sessions, yeah.
Yeah, but in those two games, have you seen anything different from Harris other than sort of motivation of the players? Like, has he set you up differently, brought in different players?
Completely different.
Yeah?
Shape's been completely different. We went to a back three against Crew. Harris admitted and said that it was a bit off the cuff and he had to just pick the team and the system on gut instinct, because he'd not had any training session. He only arrived Monday morning.
Mm.
So obviously he was announced to the press, did all his interviews, and then we spent the rest of the day trying to get players in rather than anything on the training pitch. And then there was only a light session in the morning, which I was imagining would have been gym work Tuesday because it was match day.
Yeah.
Wednesday, I don't know if they had the day off, I'm not sure. So it could have only been Thursday, Friday. But yeah, he's completely changed the system. We've gone to a back three, which we've not played at all. I think we probably played it once under Steve Evans, and we were 3-0 down inside half hour at Oxford a couple of seasons ago. So it's not been a system I've been familiar with for a long time. But it's worked. But the difference is, players want to suddenly look like they're playing for the manager, playing for the badge on the front, not the name on the back, which is a phrase that goes around amongst football fans. And we managed to hold on. We got very nervy Tuesday night against Crew. Last half hour was getting deeper and deeper, and we ended up almost playing like a back six. But we found a way to keep the ball out of our net, which we've not done this season at all. And to have turned it around to the extent that we conceded seven on the Saturday and then kept a clean sheet 3 days later was staggering. There seems to be signs that he wants us to mix up the way we play. We all know that Evans is very, very direct, and Neil Harris is not afraid to do that either. But we've played some good stuff in the two games that I've seen so far. So it looks like there'll be a different approach. Obviously, if we've got other Dane Oliver in the team, then we can go direct. We can go long and hit him if we have to. But there are good players in that squad, technically. Ollie Lee, Ben Thompson, if he gets more game time. It's going to be interesting to see how that system evolves, because what we're doing now is we're relying on our wing-backs to provide the width. We're going to be a bit narrower through the middle of the park, which hopefully makes more difficult to beat. And we've certainly not been that all season long, and that's why we are where we are. But it'll be a hope 16 games between now and May, I think, if we do ultimately drop down into two, because it'll be building for the summer almost, and on that as well.
Brilliant. One last question, Matt. Do you think the new manager bounce will continue on Tuesday night and you'll pick up the win, or what's your prediction?
I do, because I've been super impressed in how quick he's managed to have such a big influence on a group of players that confidence would have been at rock bottom. And that's no disrespect to you. I said this on Saturday when I was talking to Ipswich fans at Portman Road, no disrespect to Crew, we was going to have to be a lot better in our performance to have any hope of getting anything at Portman Road. And we were, and we deserved to get something. Ipswich players are better than Cambridge players. And that, again, that's no disrespect to Cambridge fans, Mark Bonner, or anything that you lot have done up there, because you've been brilliant all season and that's why you're sat mid-table. But I've just seen enough in the two games to provide hope that those teams that are of a similar sort of stature to us in terms of club size and resources, which I think Cambridge are, I think that's fair to say, I think we can pinch some points off of. So it won't be easy, I get that. And Cambridge are going to come with more confidence than us. You're probably only three or four wins away from 50, which would keep you up, and that would be a brilliant achievement. But I'm going to back us to win 2-1.
Brilliant. I hope you're wrong, but thank you very much, Matt.
Of course, no problem at all. Cheers, mate.
Brilliant. Big thank you there to Matt from Gills in the Blood for giving us some insight into Gillingham and how things are under the new manager, Neil Harris. Obviously, they beat Crewe recently. They were very unfortunate to lose to Ipswich this weekend. Tom, are you worried that we're playing Gillingham at the wrong time, given that there is this new manager bounce going on?
A little bit. They'll be up for it, that's for sure. I've not watched the full game, but it seems like Gillingham gave Ipswich a decent run for their money. At least stay competitive in that, which is, I guess, credit to them. They obviously won the first game they had under Harris as well. So, it's probably a more difficult prospect than if we'd played them, say, a fortnight ago, just after Evans had left, and it seemed like they were, kind of falling apart a little bit. But I don't think it's a game that we should really fear, to be honest. I think the pressure is on them. It's not on us. We need to not lose the game. Let's not pretend this is a must-win game for us. But certainly if we don't want to be losing it. So, given that we've talked in the first part about giving away soft, virgin on criminal goals, maybe what I'm about to say might be a little bit contradictory, but it's one way I think we're going to need to rely on our defensive structure a little bit and just kind of, stand up and sort of basically say to them, like, what can you do to break us down? I think it's a tougher game than it might have been, but one that we should definitely feel fairly confident that we can go there and at least do a job and get a result.
Yeah, Matt made a really good point that when they were playing Crewe at home, they got ahead, and then instead of sort of kicking on and getting a second and being quite dominant, it was actually quite a nervy ending, or a nervy sort of end period to the game for them, and they sort of clung on a little bit, which maybe the new manager gives you the spirit to do. So I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if it'll be a similar case on Tuesday night where they might be a little bit nervous. Should they take a lead and could we get back into it and get over that that stat we were talking about in the first part about not being able to win from a losing position so far this season? Owen, how gutted are you that Steve Evans is currently out of a job?
Not too upset. I'm sure there'll be a job up the road for him very soon, won't there? If things keep going the way they're going up at that lot. my concern, right, is I don't know why. I've got this like impression we've got a really dreadful record at Priestfield. I don't ever remember us winning there. I'm sure we have done, but as long as I've supported United, it just seems to be like one of those bogey grounds. I think Brighton played there for a little bit as well, didn't they? They seem to beat us all the time.
Doug Shawn tweeted about this. I think we've got to go back to like the 70s since our last win at Gillingham. But then again, we've not been in the same league as them for quite a while. So there is always that, I guess.
And we hadn't won at Walsall for ages until last year. And we hadn't won at, was it like Newport and Oldham for ages until last year. And yeah, we're better now. So maybe the duck is there to be broken.
And we never win at home to Luton. Oh, no, wait, hang on. That still goes on. Owen, we spoke in the first bit about, possible sort of changes. What are you sort of anticipating from Cambridge in terms of a lineup on Tuesday night? Do you think there'll be much difference, or do you think he'll stick with the 4-5-1?
Like we said earlier, I'd like to see Tolad start. I don't know. Bonner likes his formation, doesn't he? He likes to fit the players into a formation rather than sometimes play to his strengths. The defence is probably going to pick itself. I think it's a game too soon for Greg. I can't imagine he'll be starting if he didn't make it on Saturday. Wales obviously won't play. So you've got probably a ready-made Lancaster there to come in for him. Other than that, I think it will be much the same because that's what we've got. Maybe May for Warman, possibly. I don't know. Who knows?
Tom, how worried are you that in his first two games in charge, Neil Harris has set Gillingham up with a back three.
Yeah, that old chestnut. One that has posed problems for us in the past and may do so in the future. He's a really good manager, to be fair. I was quite surprised they managed to get him. Seems like a bit of a coup to be able to sort of attract somebody to the club who's, you know, won promotion from League One and a decent record in the Championship. So, they'll be right up for it, I should think.
And then obviously you were there for Bolton, where sort of three at the back and the wing backs really, really, really sort of did us there, didn't they? They were sort of doubling up on dunks. So we've got sort of a recent memory from a 3-5-2 going up against it. But do you think we'll see that second striker? Because obviously Bolton away, Smith was quite isolated.
I'm not sure, to be honest. It's something that I'd like to see us try. But I'm not sure if this would be the game for it. I guess there's the kind of two ways of looking at it, isn't there? There's one way you go there and you sort of try and contain and just kind of stay resilient and not concede goals. And there's the other one where you look at it and you think they're like 15 points behind us. They're clearly, albeit a new manager coming in with new ideas, they're obviously not a very good football team. And that we should be trying to take our game to them. That sounds good on paper, but I'm not necessarily sure that in the context of Harris coming in, decent result against Crewe, potentially decent performance up at Ipswich, that it would kind of play out like that. But I think again, like, you know, we talked a little bit about is Tollard ready? I think he'd be the one that would come in. I don't think we'd play necessarily Smith and Nibs up front. So I think we're basically waiting on Tollard to be ready for selection from the start. So I think we will see that, but I'm not sure we'll see it on Tuesday.
Last question for you, Tom. Would you consider a draw a good result on Tuesday?
Yeah, I think so. We're now approaching a point of the season where, as weeks go by, if we retain the distance between ourselves and the bottom four, then that's a good week. We don't have to win games as long as the others aren't winning games. That's the benefit of having put ourselves in obviously the position that we're in. I think as long as we don't lose, I think we'll be fairly happy. I mean, I say that if we are 3-0 up at half time and get a point, I don't think I'll be that happy. But I'll take the question on the face of it and say, yeah, I think a point would be fairly acceptable, I think.
Right. One last question for you both to end the pod. Squeeze has been in touch. He says, we now have a 17 game season left with no cup distractions. What are your hopes and what are your expectations for this group of games? Owen, you first.
17 cup finals, eh? My hopes are that we win all 17 of them. My expectations, expectations are slightly lower. Just come on, just give a good account of yourselves. Hopefully win more than you lose or win as many as you lose. And, you know, just try and maintain this position in the league table. To get, I think when we was at the start of the season, I think everyone was saying, oh, just to avoid relegation is going to be a good season. Where we are at the moment, let's try and push for a top half finish. Playoffs are behind us. I think that's a stretch too far. That's not going to happen, but let's keep up a bit of form. If we can get top half, happy days. If not, you know what? It's not the end of the world as long as we keep those bottom four behind us.
My hopes are that we win that not a former Championship club league table that we're doing quite well in. My expectations, we play, I think I'm right in saying, literally all of the top 10 between now and the end of the season, including Wickham twice. My expectation is that I think we've got three of those games at home. I'm expecting us to upset someone and win one of those home games. So those are my predictions. Tom, your hopes and expectations?
I mean, I'd say expectation is that we stay up, given the position that we put ourselves in. I think we've got an interesting end to the season. I think there's two There's two immediate things that I'd be looking at. And the first one is, can we push for a top half finish? Mm-hmm. That'd be a really, really decent return for a first season back at this level for a long time. And yeah, the other one, as you say, is can we upset some of the big boys, if you like? I think specifically I'm talking about Ipswich and Sunderland away at the end of the season. Can we maybe spoil the parties there? That'd be really quite enjoyable, I think. But yeah, I think I guess there's maybe one other thing as well. It might just be, can we make those last few games pressure free and enjoyable? I do not want to be in the situation where we're going to the Stadium of Light with 40,000 odd people there, needing something from that game. I know that we're quite a long way above the relegation zone now, and it might be me being too reactive to a couple of poor results. But immediately, like when I look at results, I'm still looking towards the bottom four a little bit. And if I'm nervy now with a 8-point buffer, then if we're going into the last couple of games needing results, I'll probably be a bit of a wreck. So, I think a top half finish would be pretty good. And I think we're in a decent position to, you know, at least challenge for it. So that's what I'll be hoping for, I think.
Tom, nothing to worry about, mate. Doncaster went to Stadium of Light and won. So, yeah, easy peasy.
Yeah, so it
Right, that's a good place to stop for today. I'm going to end by thanking you, as always, for listening. I'm also going to remind you that if you've not listened to our mental health special pod, which we released last week, please do. It's a really, really great piece that Julian put together. Speaks to the likes of Mark Bonner, Dion Dublin, Luke Chadwick. It's a really great listen. So you can get that where you get all your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe to Under the Abbey Stand so you get a notification when we release our weekly pods. Owen, I'm going to wish you a nice time in Italy.
Thank you. I'll do some scouting while I'm there for the next transfer window.
Tom Walker, I'm going to wish you a nice time in Gillingham.
Thank you very much. Just a quick one to Owen. I'd recommend the pasta. I hear it's decent in Italy.
Is it?
Allegedly.
Brilliant. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week.